This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very cool special guest, Cooley Haste, a.k.a. John Tulip. Welcome.
Hello, Joan. Thank you.
The name. John is a spoken word artist. I'm sure everybody on the island who goes to these wonderful events is well aware of John's spoken word, rapping, DJing skills. So the name, Cooley Haste, where did that come from?
It goes back to high school as a nickname. My big influence was LL Cool J and other Run DMC when I was a young kid for hip-hop. I called myself Cool JT as a rap name, do you know what I mean? And that evolved slowly into Cooley Hasty. Cool JT, Jasty Hasty. A friend of mine started calling me Hasty Jasty or something like that, and I just put a Y on there. So, yeah, it goes... It's a schoolboy name, Cooley Haste. You know, it's a bit embarrassing the older that I get.
I don't know. Like I said, I think it's
Cooley.
Cool.
People, it's a difficult one to say. People say Cooley or Cooley or so. Yeah, John Tulip. I've come out as recently. You know, myself.
And that's your real name.
My given name, yeah, John Francis Tulip. That's me. Yeah.
It's a lovely. Well, Tulip. That's got. Couldn't you have done a bit of a showbiz name with that?
Yeah, that's right. People have thought that was my stage name, and I've introduced myself as that in the past. But yeah, my brother is. I've got two brothers. They're both DJs. One of them, he calls himself Tulips, or you know, Fat Tulip or something like that, so there's a few things on it. So yeah, just John Tulip is pretty good.
And with that name, you've, like I was saying, you've worked the circuit really as a rapper, spoken word artist, a DJ. You've got a gig tonight, haven't you?
That's right, yeah, at the Crab in Ventnor with my good friend Russell, aka DJ Sparrow, and we play sort of good party pub music, hopefully disco, funk, rock and roll requests, whatever. But yeah, I specialise in the funk and what was the source of samples in hip hop originally as well. Why I started collecting music was as a sampling library, the 70s, 80s funk, disco, jazz, stuff like that from America mostly. And as I get older, I come to appreciate the music in itself, and I make a bit of money out of it by getting paid for my hobby, which is DJing in the pubs and clubs around Ventnor.
And we were talking earlier and you were saying, you know, perhaps your swagger is now diminishing a little bit as you're getting older, which I'm not with you on this one at all. I think you, you know, but in the dark, what does it matter? Nobody can see your face.
No, that's right. What, in the disco?
Yeah.
Swagger out of the disco. Yeah, that's right. No, but DJing is, you're kind of working and stuff and people are having a good time and you've got to join in having a good time with them as well, you know, to make the party good, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to see a sort of miserable DJ there like that. So, yeah, I try and dance. I do enjoy dancing as well, so...
And do you have special outfits that you...
No, don? Just shirts and jeans, usually, like every other middle-aged man out there down the pub. Try and be a bit smart with a collar and that, especially if there's a wedding that I'm doing.
So has anybody ever said anything to you about your age in that situation?
Well, they're not to my face. No, I don't think so. But it's just about, as I say, getting old gracefully sort of thing. That
do you want to get old gracefully?
The old man down the disco. There was this guy at Patsy's back in the day. He was like in his 60s or 70s, and he'd be bopping away. You know, and he was a great celebrity locally and stuff like that. But do you want to be that person? You
know, why not?
The oldest swinger
why
in town,
not?
Right? Yeah. I'm not the oldest man in Ventnor pub, that's for sure. I've got a long way to go yet. So I'm looking quite young when I DJ down the pub.
Yeah,
so
that's you do. You can get... because it's interesting that you've brought this subject of age and growing older. And usually it's a... You know, I'm generalising wildly here, but usually it's a women's thing. That we're worried about losing our looks and getting older and not feeling comfortable and aware how much we're changing. It's quite unusual. A lot of men just style it out, don't they?
Right. Well, I mean, I've always been aware of like the seven ages of man or whatever, that every 7 years...
You're very deep, aren't you?
You grow a new... You know, you're a new organism every 7 years, apparently. Every cell in your brain has changed or something like that. It's a popular... Could be a wives' tale. But the seven ages of man. You're a child, you're a young man, you're a mature adult, you know, and each stage requires a new outlook on life. Because if you're still, I've been reading about this lately, if you're still carrying over there are various sayings of leaving childhood things behind.
Yes, exactly,
you
know, putting away your toys, yeah.
Because if you don't, you know, and this is a problem more and more I see with the generations after me, younger people, or just men in their 30s, it's difficult to grow up, you know, and you've got to come to terms with it. You get depressed because the world is not as it should be and you're dragging your feet, still playing with your toys, basically. So I'm interested in transitioning into...
A man.
Middle age, I'm 47, so...
Okay.
But I'm still a rapper, calling myself Cooley Hayes, which was like a 16, 15-year-old thing. You know, and I see it in fiction a little bit. Like there's in American fiction, people, they're remembering their nicknames from school, you know, and you call yourself Cool Something because that was what you were like at school, trying to be like that. So the thing is about not over-identifying with these external personas. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like things can serve you like a coat or a set of clothes. It will take you through a certain stage of life. And then the art of living is knowing when to leave that old set of clothes behind, take on a new set which will open up new perspectives and horizons for the rest of your life, which whilst you're in your childhood stage, you can't imagine the, you know, the horizons that await you as an adult. And then as in your 20s, you think, oh, I know it all at every stage,
yeah,
don't you?
Indeed.
But yeah, no, it's about moving forward rather than clinging on to the things. So Cooley Hayes has a project, as an identity, it has to go through an evolution and it might be left behind like an old skin, do you know what I mean? And I'll just be John Tulip. Well, I'll come up with a new name for a new project because Cooley Hayes has gone through my whole life pretty much, but as a musical concept, it's only been popularly known since the internet came along for about 10 or 15 years. So, and that's kind of done an arc of a narrative that it's, you know, been good and then it's flattened out and then I got bored with it and it's going on tour is a pain in the backside because it's hard work, all this travelling and that. Didn't like it so much, so...
I'm finding this so interesting. I mean, I'm smiling. Well, I don't know what I'm smiling at because it's really interesting listening to your point of view and your perspective on this. But I'm thinking, my goodness, you're challenging me, the way I live, to grow up. And I, you know, I'm kind of always kicking and screaming into the next bit. And
there's another balance to that, which is keep the child alive within you, isn't it? You know, leave your toys behind, but remain childlike in your, you know, wonder and joy of the world. Do you know what I mean? Like, not to be weighed down by time. I've read recently that children are masters of time or something like that because they live
outside.
They're
totally unaware of it, aren't they? Totally unaware of time.
The childhood summer of 6 weeks, they're
goes on forever.
Through school holidays, and now we've got 2 months of rain for it when you're an adult, and then you carry on with it.
I think because as an adult, you can see it coming. Not the rain, but the time. You're working through what's going to happen the next day and the next day. Whereas a very young child, it's all new. It's all different each day, isn't it?
Yeah, they live in the moment, don't
they? Yeah, because they have to, because they're unaware of what's around the corner, which is great, and the kind of bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that's a very pure way of being, but sadly we can't continue with that, can we? But it's a real interesting, and you're the last person, you know, having seen you on the circuit and watched you perform and listen to your fantastic spoken word, you're the last person in a way I would have envisaged having this perspective on life.
Right, well, you know, I try and keep learning and reading, and I've always had a philosophical outlook on things and try and see the patterns behind things, you know, or the look into history for, you know, and psychological stuff interests me a lot, and you can combine the two into one big art, you know. Or
so what are you looking forward to then on the next stages then, and you're sort of, you know, you're saying it goes in 7 year cycles, what's the next thing that you think, yeah, I can't wait to embrace that?
Well, it's not that I can't wait to embrace it. The thing that is the normal course would be to acquire property and be, you know, start a family and put your roots down and things like that, and you know, that is the natural course of events, basically. But I haven't had kids yet.
Would you like to?
Is that something? I'm not against it. No, it's something that could happen. But, you know, again, time is slipping, so we'll see. But, you know, we're all like every generation now is, we're cut free from the expectations of what shape our life is supposed to. Or there's a lot more freedom, isn't there, than there used to be. Like, you know, those seven stages of life were clearly defined in the past, and you do what your parents did and your grandparents before them now since the post-war period. You know, the teenage rebellion shifts you away from what your parents did before, and you're free to make your own choices in life, and one of those choices is not to grow up, or to grow up possibly, you know. So we keep the child alive. There's a lot of positives that,
well,
you know, I see my friends with kids and they play with their kids on a completely child level because they've still got their, haven't put their toys away yet, and that's amazing, you know, to have a relationship like that with a kid. But then there is, should there be the, you know, minor generation gap, as the special said.
But then you get people like, for example, Jonathan Ross, who's almost made a career out of not growing up. You know, he's got his comic collection. He's got his, you know, he's very into toys, isn't he?
Right. And, Oh, well, it's a whole thing now. Have you ever seen The Big Bang Theory sitcom, American TV?
No, I know what you're talking about.
They're geeks, anyway, basically. And geekdom has become okay now. You know, it was, they'd get wedgies or whatever in the American high school scenario. But now they're actually embraced, you know, this Comic Con, Game of Thrones, stuff like that. It's all very geeky, isn't it? And
yes, yeah.
These endless superhero movies are allowing, you know, the culture is infantile. You know, there's a thing about domestication of animals that in order to effectively bring a dog or a cat or a cow into useful domestic use, you have to breed it selectively with the more infantile, docile habits.
Of course,
because otherwise they'll tear your face off, you know, like a wild animal or whatever. So humans start, you know, do this to animals, and we do it to ourselves as well. We become, you know, society, it could be a sign of decadence at the end of a cycle of civilization, or it could be like an evolutionary move that we're, more like naked in the forest, you know, like babes in the woods sort of thing, but we're equipped with technology to whatever, you know. I'm digressing.
We were talking about your love of history. So
yeah,
as a man now maturing, looking back, what's your greatest lesson that you've learnt from the past?
Well, the cycles, I guess. All things come to an end, don't they? There's the bell curve or something like that, the rise and the fall of the civilizations, you know. That and the word decadence is an interesting word. The dictionary definition of decadence is decline, and it means that once the civilization's peaked, it starts to turn in on itself and become, you know, degraded and corrupted and stuff like that. So we see this in society today. It's all very postmodern, isn't it? You know, we don't have to work to live anymore so much as people used to. So, history is about change, I guess, as well, isn't it? This thing about immigration and stuff like that. It's like the Celts were immigrants. Everyone's immigrants.
It's always been.
Do you know what I mean? So
time
the movement
immemorial.
Of people. We're seeing this huge movement of people out of the Middle East. You know, and historically it's happened before that many, many times, and the strong winds, unfortunately. But history shows the remnants of the indigenous. What I'm interested in is the indigenous history of this particular area, you know, or anywhere in the world, but where we are in particular.
Were you born here?
I was born on the Isle of Wight. So my roots, my parents are both from the mainland, as they say. So I'm born and raised, I'm an islander, and it's as good as anything that I've got to love the earth where you're from. If you love where you live, love you back, got enough gift to give, and this one is just rap. I'll build the bridge if you've got a gap, and we'll get there together like two train tracks or a fat hand clap, is the thing about the Isle of Wight, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the more time I spend there, the more rewarding it is. You enter into a relationship with your environment, the birds and the trees and the bees and the land itself, you know, and realise growing vegetables that all of the pagan religions were about giving thanks for things like this, and sort of fertility cults and things like that. And for me, that's all fascinating, because now we've lost any kind of ceremony. We're all post-religious. We don't believe in Jesus Christ like all of our
some people still
hundreds
do, though,
of generations
don't they?
Before. Yeah, a lot of people
but
do.
It's but it's not ingrained as it was.
The
southeast
of England, I've heard, is the most godless place on the planet, which is, for me, a source of pride in a way. Like I say, we're free to make our own mythology now these days.
So in terms of the island and mythology, because I know that's something that really interests you and it's one of your passions.
Right.
In terms of the island mythology, what's your favourite tale?
My favourite story is a historic story, the Isle of Wight, and I'm not going to be very accurate with the dates and the names. But the Saxon kings of Wessex, before 1066... it was maybe 600 AD or something like that. The Saxon kings of Wessex came to the Isle of Wight, gifted it. One nobleman gifted it to another nobleman as his territory. And they were newly converted Christians, this particular royal family of these Wessex kings. It's kind of a bit before Harold, did he burn the cake? No, Alfred burned the cake, mm-hmm. didn't he? A bit before Alfred. And they... it's written in, I don't know if it's Bede's History of Britain or something like that, but basically they wiped out the population of the Isle of Wight, who they found to be pagans, and they replaced them with Christianized people that they bought from Wessex or whatever their Saxon kingdom was. So the first act of Christianity on the Isle of Wight was to kill everyone here. And
I can see you enjoy that story, don't you?
That is my example, and you think about the Red Indians in America, not to use their correct term, the Native Indians were wiped out by the invading Europeans, and the same thing has happened on every place on the planet. There was an indigenous natural people who were invaded, and this is, we touched on it with the immigrants earlier, you know, by marauding groups of Celts or Attila the Hun or whoever it was, Alexander the Great sweeping across Afghanistan. Do you know what I mean? It's interesting stuff. But I love these stories, and I love to imagine those times in the landscape of these stories of the Isle of Wight, and you can... it's still there. The paths are there. We walk the paths of our ancestors.
Indeed, it's a very special place like that.
Wherever there's a road or a footpath with a deep cutting like that, as there are many around, they've been walked on for thousands of years. That they were up at field level at one point.
That's right.
But, magic, stuff like that, literally.
So can we hear some of your magical words,
of course,
please?
Right, I will start with... this is one of my oldest rhymes. Well, it's from my mid-20s, and it's MC Oceanic, and it's about the ocean, but it's like in a rap style. So there's a antagonist, and I'm the protagonist, and there's a challenge and a battle, and it's talking about that you're a sucker and I am good. You know, putting someone down to big yourself up, which is a lot of rap and stuff. So anyway, my rhymes are smooth like the ocean. I move with the motion of waves that break to shape the cliffs, coasts and the caves in a host of ways that amaze. I carve coves and bays with a well-honed phrase that sprays and decays away your defences. My strength is tremendous, the sea is relentless, the pounding is endless, you're floundering senselessly hoping to stay afloat. I heard you quote a rhyme that I wrote, so I capsized your boat. I broke it in half, now you're soaked to the skin. You cling to a raft for weeks, and if you don't starve, then you might reach the beach of an unknown island. In vain you tried climbing the cliff, now you sit and watch the tide rising. My rapping is lapping to the beat round your feet. You're so weak you sleep, and the backwash sweeps you back to the vortex of sound. My voice drags you down and you drown. Your corpse can't be found by the Coast Guard, lifeboat, air, sea, rescue. I formed a storm and they meet their death through breath too short to be caught. I guess you ought to have brought yourself a wetsuit and life preserver. I cover 2/3 of the planet. I am the MC Oceanic. So that's MC Oceanic.
I love that.
Which, as I've got older, I've discovered the term oceanic is possibly a Freudian description of the unconscious.
So that works quite well in a way.
So, yeah, the ocean obviously is a metaphor for the unconscious. Whenever you dream of bodies of water, apparently it's the unconscious or something like that. So, yeah, there's that one. And there's a series I've done. That is the water. I've done earth, which is volcanic, and I've done air, which is atmospheric, which I will perform for you today if we get time.
Yeah, do it now.
Okay, so they're like rap meditations on elements, and this one I do atmospheric, which is the air.
Thank you.
The breeze in my hair is the air that we breathe, that we share with the leaves on the trees. The birds and the bees seize wind for their life on the wing, like a reed needs wind to sing. I can hold a piece up, but you can't see a thing. It's the medium that this sound moves in. Combined with light, its twin makes matter. The space is great in the middle of an atom. Lungs inflate and fish have a bladder. The gas escapes like legs up ladders. I guess its weight is less than a feather, yet concentrates to make high pressure and weather. Air moves in waves and tides like water. It fills the skies at its highest border. Lies out to space, I'll take the haste transporter straight back to base to await more orders. I'll play air hockey in the aircon airport. I've got air pockets in the Nike Air's ice ball. I don't need rockets or a flight in Concorde, cause I cut through topics with my onboard tongue sword. I'm hot like the tropics, as cold as the poles. The Greeks believe breath was the seat of the soul. So I draw inspiration, then deftly express it. My style's esoteric, I'm the MC atmospheric.
Your use of language, I mean, it's so lyrical, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Delivered in that style, that rap style, because obviously you could deliver those words in many different ways, couldn't you?
Mm.
Delivered in that style, do you think that well, I imagine that makes it far more accessible, perhaps, to a younger audience.
Yeah, well, poetry was not something that I was in. I did it at O-level and it turned me off. We did the war poets, Ted Hughes and
yes,
the like.
Wilfred Owen.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy school, generally. I had very little inspiration at school with teachers or subjects that got me going, you know what I mean? I couldn't wait to get out of there. Rap is a funny thing because it's the English language, and it's I've done workshops with young people, and rap is accessible and interesting, and this is why I got into it, because it's a dynamic, fresh sounded thing. But the poetry aspect of it is, you know, the older that you get, I quote this a lot, that the muse is upon you in your early 20s as a man, apparently, the inspiration of the poetic triple nines aspect, goddess of the muse. And the older that you get, you become less and less poetically inspired and spontaneously, you know, you have your day, your golden period.
Mm.
And the older that you get, the more preoccupied with form you become as an artist, generally, you know.
So okay.
What comes out of you in your early 20s is real raw.
Fresh and raw, yeah.
You know, this is what culture is built on, sort of thing. Maybe these great movements in history have been, well, poetically and artistically generally, you know, it's the youth. And this is, you know, we are a youth-obsessed culture, aren't we?
But I suppose, you know, if one wanted to be snobbish about it, perhaps rap is viewed as a more gritty, not as highbrow, as classic poetry.
No, that's right. That's right. But it's highbrow at its own expense, isn't it, poetry? Because it's you have to get into it.
Very good point.
A deep layer of understanding, sort of thing, that they tried to teach us about at school in poetry, but it was lost because you get bogged down in the something boring about it, you know.
But the ideas and the concepts and the way you use words,
yeah,
is just as poetical as any,
yeah,
classic piece.
Yeah.
And like I say, you're delivering it in a classic rap style, but you could read that in many different ways.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I'm interested in writing some of it down because of how effective the message would be read off the page as the lyrics I've written. It wouldn't have so much of the rhythm that I can put into it, and I'm delivering it. Which I think I would prefer the song as a medium, you know, for me to rap over a beat, because I like the beats and I like the rap. But I am going to try writing down, and I'm working on some other visual aspects to it.
Have you ever heard anybody else perform your work?
A couple of times in life, people have wrapped it back to me because they've remembered the words, or I've got someone to do a backing track underneath what I'm saying. So,
how does that feel?
Yeah, it's funny. It's when people rap back to me a couple of lines, it is flattering, for sure. Yeah, yeah. But they're just little
catchphrases
people
almost.
People will remember
just
a couple of lines, you know. And
but you've not actually seen somebody perform a whole piece.
No. I don't think I ever will. Hopefully, I don't think I'd like that. There's a thing in rap about doing, you know, singing other people's lyrics. And I started off at school doing other people's raps, you know, Run DMC and stuff like that with friends in a band, mucking about. But
that's how we learn, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've seen rap karaoke actually. Well, I've heard it a couple of times from a distance, and it sounds really funny. And I would really love to do rap karaoke of a couple of my favourite rap tracks. That, you know, I know the lyrics as well as my own, some of this classic old stuff.
Perhaps that's something to introduce in your next gig.
Yeah, no, it does exist. Yeah,
right. It's a good idea. Well, thank you so much. I'm smiling away because this is also so interesting and so really kind of different, and you're really stretching my brain and my way of thinking here, which is great. So we'll be back after this very short break. Please keep listening, and thank you very much, Cooley Hayes, for sharing your wonderful words.
Thank you.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666.
Welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest, rapper and DJ Cooley Haste. Welcome back.
Hi, Joan. Thank you.
Hello. I was just thinking, actually, as I was fiddling about with these buttons here, you being a very professional and competent DJ must just despair watching me work at this desk, because it must be like looking at a monkey with a hand and a coconut. It's just...
Well, no, you know more what you're doing than I would.
No,
goodness.
So... Going back to what you were saying, you said you were running some poetry workshops.
Yeah.
And so you're teaching. How does that feel to be passing on your knowledge?
Yeah, it's good. It was a very rewarding experience. I've done a few workshops on the island with a few groups of, you know, different groups of young people. Yeah, no, it's really rewarding. And the thing I would say is that everyone that comes through these workshops is like a diamond. And you could say that for the whole planet. Everyone has got a story to say, you know what I mean? If you can...
That's a lovely, lovely way of putting it.
Put them into a relaxed space or inspire them a little bit. The things that they come out with is amazing. And, well, like any creative exercise, you can't imagine if there's two of you what the other person's going to bring to it. You know what you're going to say. But that was my strong experience. Teaching isn't really the easiest thing for me. I was quite nervous before every workshop, without cause, but it's like I get a bit of stage fright the last few hip-hop gigs I've done as well. You know, I've lost that confidence of youth that we keep touching on, you know, the swagger, call it what you will. I become more self-reflective as I get older, you know, and less willing to sort of put myself out there a little bit. But I do it every weekend down the pub when I'm DJing, so, yeah, I'll definitely keep my hand.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And because you've done quite a lot of gigs at the event in the Winter Garden now that it's reopened.
That's
and it's
right.
Happening there now. So
that's
fantastic.
It's our local nightclub, open till 2 a.m, so you can have a good disco there. The pub's kind of shut 12 or 1 or whatever, so that extra hour on the dance floor, if it's good, is really good, yeah.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you to have a gig right on the roof. Up there,
I did one 2 weeks ago.
Did
actually.
You?
It was the bank holiday weekend on Saturday, and I was up there. It was beautiful weather.
Yeah.
But I started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was baking hot. And there was a gazebo up there for me, and I had my vinyl decks up there, and we had to put up a gazebo wall before we could start because the sun was very, very hot.
Would they melt?
They would very quickly if exposed to direct sunlight. Yeah. So, and even in the heat. Even in the shadow, you know, we were out in the elements for a couple of hours. But once I got going and the vibe was great for sunset up to, we had to finish at 9 o'clock because there's a curfew for the sound up there. The wind was blowing the sound away from town, so it was all good. But, yeah, I've definitely been doing quite a bit of work at Winter Gardens. because it's a great venue, amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
venue.
And that roof garden is a joyous location,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, they've had the decking done up there, and it's looking really good. Next summer, unfortunately, you know, they're still finishing it off this year. We just got that one gig in up there at the end of the summer, but hopefully next year we'll be having some great sort of sunset vibes.
You answered a question I had about you. Do you have a massive collection of vinyl?
I do, quite a few thousand. 2,000 or 3,000, I guess, rough estimate.
And what does your partner, Pascal, think of that?
She's quite happy to hear the different music when I'm going through it before I've got a gig and stuff like that.
And so it's like you've got a room dedicated to it?
No, I've just got a big double sort of 6-foot shelf in the lounge and a big sort of sprawling mass in front of it that is constantly getting churned up every week that I have to do a gig.
And these are what you've collected since you were a kid, presumably?
Yeah, pretty much, since as a teenager and stuff. I mean, I've got a lot in a cupboard upstairs and some still at my mum's in Newport.
Now, I'm going to ask a question that you're going to think is really stupid, but sorry. Are they scratched where you do the scratching? No, you're looking at me
all
like I'm completely...
All records get scratched over time.
But when you do your extra special scratching when you're doing your DJ, are they kind of ruined?
It does wear out the groove. If you're scratching the same bit, you know, the intro of a beat, very quickly it will sort of be really fluffy as it goes through, like that. You'll hear this sort of background here, so it does... degenerate records, but I'm not a particularly scratchy DJ as it goes.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm more of a smooth blend on the mix.
Right, okay, that's good to know. And what's your most prized piece of vinyl?
That's a difficult question. I know that I've certainly paid the most money for a couple of albums by a group called Pleasure, who are like an early 80s jazz punk outfit from America, who they're quite soppy songs, but I really, really like this band, Pleasure. They're amazing. They're quite a little bit obscure, but I paid like up to about 30 quid for a couple of those albums, which are probably the most expensive records I've bought. I don't value them that much. My favourite album, I'll say off the top of my head, is Eugene McDaniel's Headless Heroes of the Apocalypse. That is a album, I tell you what.
And what era is that from?
It's from the 70s, and it's funk, jazz funk, mostly funk, and it's politically sort of charged stuff. I was talking about genocide of indigenous people and stuff like that that's in there, you know, the African-American experience, obviously, of the history of slavery in America and stuff, and there's this, it's this kind of rage. I guess some of my hip-hop is a bit like that when I perform on stage. There's quite a bit, there can be anger in the political stuff like that, you know, and it's like the horrors, you know, the shadow play of the world sort of thing. You know, people don't really like to talk and hear about that stuff. But
I don't know. I think we're forced to hear about so much of it now because it's just, it is on the open stage now.
Yeah.
Have you got a piece of work that illustrates that?
I have, yes.
That anger?
No news is good news, because their news is bad. It's bombs in Baghdad and the man from Mossad has trained all our troops to be prison warders, installing a wall on all of our borders. The rise and fall of the New World Order on pay-per-view on your Blu-ray recorder. America Online and British Broadcaster Corporation support the slaughter. Embedded reporters impart propaganda that's black and white like the pelt of a panda and red all over like the face of anger, with comic characters like Mags from manga. Have men play Jenga with social structures. Now the towers have fallen, we're all on crutches. I rise to the calling for funk instructors. I tune into the cosmos because TV corrupts us. That's a bit about news and propaganda and stuff.
When did you write that, John?
I wrote that probably in like the noughties or the sort of teens of the late noughties. You know, around 2006, 2007, 2008, something like
because
that.
Because so much, it's quite a prophetic piece, isn't it? There's quite a lot of that still happening.
Yeah, and I try and put that into my stuff.
Huge events that we're all too well aware of are echoed in that piece that you wrote almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, probably not that long ago,
10 or 15.
10,
yeah, but still a long time.
So I'll do another piece, and this is the history of the 21st century in an alphabet rap.
Oh, I love this one. Yeah, go.
So I've been particularly inspired by, in a negative way, George Bush and Tony Blair's oil wars in Iraq and Afghanistan as it began, you know, and it's unfolded now into the neoliberal, you know, war on the Middle East and enemies of Israel generally. Not that I'm saying that's the thing behind it. But anyway, this is the ABC 21st century, and it starts in around 2001 with an Anglo-American allied attack against Afghanistan and Iraq. That's the A's. Bush, Blair, Brown and Barack, the butchers of Baghdad, Babylon's back, capturing countries on Christian crusades, driverless drones drop death every day. Elizabeth's empire is ever expanding, fighting foreigners, foes and phantoms. Global gangsters are guarding the gate of hereditary hierarchies harboring hate. Individuality is an illusion, just like Jesus, the Jew of Jerusalem. Knights and knaves lay landmine linoleum, minor majors are the new Napoleon. Oil, obviously. Ordnance, opium, the pipes of peace pump pure petroleum. The Queen is a quite queer royal reptilian. She sat on the stone she stole from the Scottish kings. The throne's tone is torture and terror. Under United Nations umbrellas, the vanquished victims visit Valhalla. When we x-ray Yahweh, you'll see Zoroaster and Zachariah Sitchin sitting on a ziggurat, listening to Zeppelin while I'm rapping over Zap and Roger. And that is the first 10 years, roughly, of the 21st century. I've written another alphabet which picks it up from there. Another assault against Arabs and Africans. Brimstone bombs blast Bedouin battalions. Corbyn's comrades collaborate with Cameron to destroy Damascus and erase Elysium. We fell for a fascist false flag fear factory, a fake free market fundamentalist fantasy. Gideon grins in the genocide gallery. Hillary hoped to hinder insanity, invoking ISIS and Islamophobia. Israel's incursions are judged by Jehovah. Kurds with Kalashnikovs love Land Rovers. Mrs. May might go nuclear nova. Ostentatious opulence paraded past the public. When the Queen quits her reign, I recommend a republic for Stockholm syndrome suffering subjects. When times get tough, they turn to Trump the tyrant. But these usurpers were uninvited, a vampire's vices vain and violent. Welcome to the wonderful worldwide wiretap. William waits in the wings of the White House while Wi-Fi warrior, Xbox experts execute Yemenis. I'm a yin-yang Zen priest and a Zeppelin pilot with a zeitgeist zygote. I zoom and zigzag through the zodiac to Zion. So that takes us up to Donald Trump and Brexit.
Yes.
Which was last year, as
indeed,
we all know.
Yeah.
And the gates of hell open.
Indeed they did, yeah.
Yeah.
And so having you as a teacher must have been, I mean, producing work like that must be hugely inspirational for your students.
I hope so. I hope so. Very few of them are actually rappers in the workshops. One or two were interested in that. Generally, they were the more poetic type. And I hope what I brought to that mostly was a more energetic, direct, you know, rap is very direct and poetry is, you know, quite introspective. It can be in a way, so to bring a bit of that directness to them was, and the rhythm as well, you know, they're not necessarily things that they were thinking about with their poetry, and as far as communicating clear, you know, the rhythm can increase resonance.
And I think when I first got involved with spoken word gigs and heard spoken word artists, it was very alien to me. It was very, very different to what I was used to hearing, I suppose. And in a way, you've got to tune your ears to it, haven't you? And you've got to open your mind to it.
Yeah, you've got to quiet your mind as well, I think, a little bit.
Yes. And the more I went and the more I listened and the more I heard, and then I'd hear the same thing again, and like anything, you hear something differently, you hear something new that you've missed the first time. Mm. And it was a real, well, it expanded my mind, it opened my mind, and it was a real education in what was being said. Yet, I think it's easy, perhaps for somebody like me of my generation, to dismiss it and say, oh, it's, you know, it's just rap, and write it off.
Yeah.
But it's not, and I think it's wonderful that people now with the social media and the, you know, kids that are using all the emojis are coming out, and it's a very quick way of communicating, be it on a text or a message, whatever. And this is, it's so much deeper than that, isn't it? And you're really getting your thoughts and ideas across with it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was writing, rapping about rapping a lot as a youngster. You know, there's the showing off and the bragging and the boasting and my raps are good. But that there's wordplay, you know, that encourages you to do the most complicated rhymes that you possibly can with a weird syncopated rhythm to it. Metaphors and punchlines used to be sort of one of my dogmas that I try and do all my raps. You know, loads of witty metaphors and clever things. But the older that I get, actually, I think I understand more the power of words as a transformative thing if they're delivered in the right way, at the right time, to the right person. You know, amazing things can happen, and every inspiration on the planet has probably come around through someone saying the right thing to the right person. You know, the whole edifice of the church of Christianity, for example, you know, was because some people got worked up over someone, St. Paul's or Peter's words or whatever it was, you know. And we are now at a stage with looking for a new mythology, because the edifice of Christianity has crumbled. And if I've got time to do a final piece,
please do,
on mythology. Now, this is my opus at the moment, and it's a work in progress, and it's called Hidden Goddess. And it is about the feminine being obscured out of Christian mythology in particular, patriarchal societies more generally. And it was inspired around it's another alphabet, and the word mother, and I don't know if it's Latin or German, mater, and matter and material, all having the same root. That behind the God of Jehovah who created the world, there were the waters running still before he arrived with his wind. And what are the waters? These are hidden goddesses. So I'll take you through this.
Okay.
Attention, all awoken, as I ask for an assist and approval for my art from angelic Artemis. I aim and aspire to alternative almighties, like an arrow of Amore of Astarte Aphrodite. And Athena is the architect of ancient Athens. Her Acropolis is the apex of Aegean attractions. She is the activating agent of their actions, the archetypal anima awaiting the assassins. Boadicea is the bravest beauty of Britain. She battled the barbarians but was beaten by brigands. Ceres is the cherished child of the corn. Sibyl cooks in caves, craters, cups and crucibles. Diana and Demeter dance at dusk and dawn. It's the dear darling damsels and dames I do adore. Eve was evicted from Earth's eastern Eden. She eloped with Europe one Easter evening. Followed by fairies, fates and furies fleeing, for they found the feminine, forgotten and forbidden. Gaia and the Gorgon grew the genes the god got given, so the genius in Genesis is a goddess he has hidden. Hera and Hecate are the hosts of Hell and Heaven, are hail Hades' heroine and Hector's hostage Helen. When hunting Higgs with Hadron, it's to Hathor he is heading. My home is on Hygieia's happy hill of healthy heather. ISIS is innocent of Islamic insurrection. ISIS isn't involved in Iraqi independence. ISIS is an infinite, immaculate inception. ISIS is imminent and immune to your inspection. If the information industry insists on her inflection, instead I'll invite Ishtar's and Inanna's intercession. The Duke joint jury gives Jezebel justice. Kali and Kore kick out King Christos. The Lady of the Lake loves liquid lyrics. Lunar light and the laws of Lilith. The ley lines look like lounging lizards whose limbs lie where low land is lifted. Mythic man must have a missus, but in Moses' myth the missus missing. And mostly mute, I'm on a mission to move minds like a mad magician. As I move my mass through the material matrix, on matter's meaning I meditated, cause meanings matter, Marina made it, and Mother Mary remained a maiden. Naked natives nurture nature, but NATO nations nuke and napalm. The owl and the oracle observe each other, or oil's okay, but only olive on offer. Persephone plunged into Pluto's pit. It's Pandora's pocket that physics has picked. The queen of quintessence is quantum and quick. Rhiannon rode past, reclined on a rick. Sophia supplies the sapient sense that Solomon sought. So for Sheba he sent the turf and terrain beneath Tabernacle tent, the up and the under, the valve and the vent. The woman of wisdom is weaving her web of the world where the wizards and witches are wed. In the womb of wonder, what waits to be said is peace. See you later, coolie haste, XYZ. That's a rushed ending on the end there. But I'm name checking every goddess that I can think of from classical mythology. And also there's a linguistic aspect in there that, you know, the matrix is the net, you know,
yes,
the spider, these concepts, the web of life and stuff like that. The wise woman, the witch of the wicked west, of the Easter, you know, they're all goddesses. Eve, you know, Eve was evicted from Europa. She was the goddess who rode a cow that Zeus, some story like that, you know, and it's like... we've got too much patriarchy. Of Donald Trump is the wet dream of the right wing, as Obama was the wet dream of the left wing. But now Donald Trump is seeing through this final stages of patriarchy, of ecocide and, you know, denial of his climate change and whatnot like that. The final throes of the patriarchy before this wave of, hopefully, this is what I'm trying to initiate with my ambitiously with my poem, to inform people of another possibility and mythology of a caring, inclusive, relationship-based goddess, you know, rather than the hero killing the object, the solar Apollo model that we've had since.
Do you see all women as goddesses?
I do, yeah, definitely the ones in my life. But, you know, as much as, you know, it's a Gnostic idea that, which is a heresy of Christianity, that God is within you. You know, that you can become godlike through your, you know, or. But yeah, the goddess is an interesting thing. The Earth herself, Gaia, is the goddess. Her wisdom, everything on the planet comes out of the Earth. So she's got to be worth praising, definitely, for everything that exists on her, you know, for sure.
And is your partner into this kind of words and rapping? Is this something that, you know, you share?
No, she enjoys me doing it, hopefully. She's very busy at the moment. She runs a natural skincare company, and she's opening a shop in Ventnor later this month, at the end of this month, beginning of next month, hopefully. She's like a foreman on a building site, trying to sort out the floors and the walls, right?
And where is the building site?
It's 7 Pier Street in Ventnor, two doors down from Co-op, next to the Masala Bay. And she'll be selling her natural skincare in there. And she's getting some local artists and other producers of goods to...
So is this skincare well. Products that she has produced herself, or that she's sourced?
She produces them herself. She sources... it's all botanical... plant oils, base oils, and then she adds essential oils to those. I use it as a moisturiser, you know, for your scalp. Pre-shave, aftershave, I use it for personally as a moisturiser, because all of these chemical products that so-called moisturisers that you buy, which are cream-based, have got emulsifiers in them, which actually takes possibly moisture out of your skin rather than adding it to you, and there's a lot of toxic stuff in our environment, chemical wise, and she's offering a way to have a clean skincare regime without you.
Lovely. What's the shop going to be called?
Blue Label. Her name is Pascal Edwards Label, and she's called the brand Blue Label because she sells these botanical oils in little blue bottles. And I do the packaging for them because I'm a graphic designer by day. And we're quite a good team, hopefully. And yeah,
lovely. Can't wait for that. So that's 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. Certainly. Lovely. End of September, beginning of October. Hopefully, we're aiming for. Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, I'm going to have to let you go because you've got a gig to do.
I have. Yeah. No rest for the wicked.
Well, good luck to that, and remind people where that is.
Tonight at the Crab and Lobster. That's on Grove Road in Ventnor. I'll be there with DJ Sparrow, playing funk disco, and all of that.
Cool. Super.
Thanks, Joan.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. And like I say, you've really opened my mind, and I've loved hearing those beautiful words. So have you got a spoken word gig, just quickly coming up?
No, I haven't got any gigs spoken
word. Oh, please, somebody book this man.
I'll need to sort something out. Yeah. Vent at the exchange or
yes,
something
please.
Like that.
Yeah. Yes, please. And if you get an opportunity to watch Cooley Hayes perform, it will be an evening well spent. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Joan.
It's been a joy. And thank you so much for listening. Have a lovely weekend, and look forward to speaking to you again next week. Take care now. Bye-bye. www.vectisradio.com